Hey everyone, I'm Cleo.
I'm Aubrey.
I'm Daniela.
And together we are The Forum, a podcast brought to you by the Institute on Science for Global Policy.
And while Daniela tells you in a minute about how to reach us on social media, you all get to guess what favorite forum statistic we'll be discussing in today's episode.
All right, so if you like what you hear today, or you just want to say hi or leave us some feedback, make sure to tweet us at ISGP Forum and use the hashtag ISGP Forum. You'll also find us on Facebook and SoundCloud by searching ISGP's The Forum.
So if you took a quick look at this episode's title and have heard literally any of our food talks before, you probably guessed that we'll be talking about feeding a population of 9 billion by the year 2050.
There it is. Favorite forum statistic number one. So if you guessed this would be our topic of conversation, you'd be absolutely correct. But as usual, we'll be giving the statistic a new context today, you know, so that we're not overly repetitive and boring with our episodes. Today, we're going to be chatting about the discussion that took place in regards to a paper written and defended by Dr. Cecilia Bartolucci, a researcher and coordinator at the National Research Council of Italy's S&T Foresight Project.
The paper was titled Diversified Adaptable Food Toward Personalized Nutrition and was presented by Dr. Bartolucci in 2015 at the Food Safety, Security and Defense, Food Security and Diet-Linked Public Health Challenges Conference held in partnership with North Dakota State University in Fargo.
Essentially, the paper argues that in the future, the application of converging technologies, so things like biotech, nanotechnology, information technology, and cognitive science, will help us to achieve personalized, predictive, and preventative healthcare. Integral parts of this framework are, of course, nutrition and food.
Perhaps one of the most interesting parts of Dr. Bartolucci's paper, or I guess what sets it apart from other papers we've covered from ISGP's past food safety, security, and defense conferences, is that Dr. Bartolucci isn't actually advocating for an increase in food production as much as she's actually, on the other hand, calling for improvement in food's quality, production, and distribution.
And these efforts, according to Dr. Bartolucci, must be made with a certain amount of interdisciplinarity. So we're talking about implementing new technologies within the food chain through an interdisciplinary approach.
All right, but let's back it up a bit here, because I think it'd be useful to get a sense of what the debaters deem to be the current realities of this food situation.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. So in the next 20 to 30 years, it's pretty clear that the world will be challenged to sustainably and equitably provide enough food to support a steadily growing population. And remember, we're talking about 9 billion and beyond here.
The thing is, though, that while current food yields are actually sufficient to feed this growing population, our global food system is focused on producing higher yields as opposed to higher quality food. Because of this, many people believe today's food system won't be sustainable when it comes to society's development and resource management.
Basically, while we will totally have enough food by sheer volume and calorie count, this food is not necessarily keeping us healthy or supporting sustainable lifestyles.
Production must therefore make strides toward being both sustainable and equitable, while also focusing on diverse foods that can be adapted to have increased nutritional value.
So it may be a good time to mention that emerging bio and nanotechnologies, as well as conventional breeding, are helping to increase nutritional value and quality of existing produce.
But we also have to remember that even though these methodologies are being introduced at various market levels, current regulatory frameworks around the globe lack consistency in ensuring the safe use of biotechnology.
Right. So let's take, for instance, the definition of the term nanomaterials. The US and the EU have a fairly similar definition nailed down, but definitions in Asia are either still being developed or they vary enough to make things pretty sticky when we try to start regulating. So, for example, the Chinese definition is, quote, material which has structure in the three-dimensional space in at least one dimension in the nanometer scale, or constituted by the nanostructure unit and a material with special properties, end quote. And the US definition for nanomaterial is, quote, any particle, substance, or material that has been engineered to have one or more dimensions in the nanoscale, end quote. I think I know which one I like better, which one I actually understand.
Okay, but regulation disparities aside, any nutritious and sustainable food we produce doesn't do as much good if it's not distributed to all who need it.
Yeah, so this is definitely something the debaters spent a decent amount of time on, as it's a major part of what defines food security.
And you can think of food security as having three fundamental parts of its definition. So first, someone has to have access to food.
Then there has to be enough food.
And then this food has to contain enough nutrition to support a healthy lifestyle. Therefore, increasing food security doesn't just mean more and healthier foods, but it also means decentralizing food production and distribution in order to make it more widely available.
If we have a ton of good food that supports healthy lifestyles, but only along the coastlines of the US, for instance, then what good does it do for the rest of the globe?
Exactly. And just to clarify, when we say decentralizing, we mean stuff like getting our food from multiple sources, potentially both nationally and internationally, and even moving towards more local or regional food systems.
And while new decentralized distribution methodologies have been implemented in some scenarios, these attempts approach distribution from the end of the food chain rather than from the beginning, and only exist in a few locations.
Okay, so that definitely seems like it needs some work.
Most definitely.
Something else that requires our attention is, of course, the money issue. So the integration of biotechnology and food production is no cheap endeavor. In both affluent and less affluent nations, economic incentives tend to emphasize quantity over quality, causing populations to experience simultaneous undernourishment and obesity.
And so let's tease this one out for a minute, because it can definitely sound like an oxymoron at first. So just because you have adequate calories, it doesn't mean you have adequate nutrition. If you were, for instance, getting the majority of your meals from McDonald's, this would totally be the case. Chances are, if you adopt this dietary lifestyle and aren't a teenager or one of my guy friends here in grad school who eat mac and cheese at 2 in the morning, then you'll have some trouble keeping that number on the scale to a low level. And there you have it, an obese yet undernourished, greasy human.
Kind of gross, but thank you for the explanation, Aubrey.
Anytime.
This unfortunate cycle becomes just that, cyclic. As the food industry fails to invest in the development of higher quality crops, mainly because of the small projected return on these investments.
And the result is that nutritionally enhanced crops and food products that could be released to the market, if companies had the means to recover their investments, are not available to consumers.
Another issue we come across pretty early on in this discussion is consumer knowledge and perception of food. Although consumers have in fact been known to influence the marketplace,
like my single-handed effort in getting tahini oil sold at the supermarket by my house in Florida.
Wait, number one, I don't even know what that is. And number two, did you actually? I don't think that's exactly what we're talking about here, but I'm still curious. How and why did you do this?
All right, well, tahini is sesame oil, and you can make hummus with it, obviously. The Publix in my neighborhood didn't sell tahini, and I basically annoyed them into providing it in a limited supply on one of their specialty shelves. So I guess I'm pretty cool. Some might even call me a local celebrity. Or a local superhero. Take your pick.
I think I'm going to cut you off right here from storytelling today.
Thanks, Daniela. Daniela, you're saving us all.
Whatever. It was a big accomplishment for all of Southwest Florida's Collier County. All right? You weren't there, you would have known.
Okay. So anyway, although consumers have in fact demonstrated an ability to influence the marketplace, Cleo, the debaters believed the scientific community isn't doing a great job empowering those consumers via provision of clear and unambiguous guidelines to facilitate healthy food choices.
And to add to this, the media usually isn't very helpful either. In fact, dietary suggestions in popular media that aren't based on scientific evidence further hinder the public's perspective of what constitutes a quality diet.
Totally. And we all know that we should eat our servings of fruits and veggies and fiber as our friend and all that, but sometimes it's not so straightforward.
And we're finding that's especially true when you consider how unique people and populations are. In a perfect world, an ideal diet would be personalized with respect to an individual's microbiome and genetic information, and even take into account epigenetic, economic, social, and other environmental factors.
Right, but the issue here is that the tools needed to personalize nutrition aren't fully developed yet.
So let's get into this issue a little bit then, because it seems like a pretty big deal. Opportunities totally exist for nutritious food production through the use of emerging technologies, but this is within a reformed food system, so not the food system that we currently have in place.
And we can achieve this reformed food chain by taking a forward-thinking approach that considers the food chain as a whole. This approach would ideally stimulate a constant evaluation of how introducing a new technology or any other innovation is really going to affect the rest of the food chain.
And this would be a global challenge of sorts, requiring internationally cohesive and coordinated actions while also supporting awareness and consideration of local realities.
But because having a global perspective while still considering things down to the local and municipal levels is no easy task, we're going to need to involve some pretty smart people in this conversation.
And by smart people, we're talking about experts with specific disciplinary skills working in highly multidisciplinary contexts who are willing and able to transfer their knowledge to a variety of audiences.
And if you're wondering, but how ever will we be able to find and recruit such people for this daunting task, you're definitely not the only one. Luckily, though, the National Research Council of Italy, CNR, thought of at least one project that jumpstarts us on the issue. In May of 2015, the CNR, in collaboration with the Trieste Area Science Park Consortium and the Ministry of Education, held a face-to-face workshop on converging technologies for sustainable and healthy food.
This event was focused on diversified adaptable food and attracted more than 50 participants, including international experts representing relevant academic disciplines, policymakers, politicians, and NGOs. Sounds ISGP conference-esque.
Well, among some of the findings from this gathering, as well as something agreed upon by debaters at the ISGP conference we're actually discussing today, is that food production must maximize both quality and diversity of diets rather than solely prioritizing nutrient density.
This goal could be achieved by taking measures that ensure high quality throughout the food chain, not just at the cultivation or manufacturing ends. Huge potential also exists in adoption of new technologies. And we've mentioned technology as a solution a few times in this episode, so let's take the time now to divulge a little of what we meant by that.
All right, so for the purpose of this debate, we're mainly referring to nanotechnology and bioengineering. Nanotechnology can be used at various production stages to deliver higher production yields and enhance nutritional values. It can also be used in agriculture via nanofertilizers and nanopesticides. Then, bioengineering techniques can produce diversified, adaptable, and resistant crops.
Opportunities were also identified, though, for using technology in food preservation, processing, packaging, and even delivery. The debaters also emphasized the importance of emerging strategies that combine traditional methods, things like fermentation or dehydration, with newer technologies. So stuff like biofortification and metabolomics, which can preserve, protect, and process food.
Examples of these technologies in action include probiotic-enhanced foods, soils, and crops that help enhance quality and improve global health.
Unfortunately, though, public skepticism surrounding these technologies is a very real challenge to their integration in our food system, which is interesting considering the wide public acceptance of nanoscale systems in medicine. The hope, though, is that our acceptance of nanotech in a different field is actually a positive sign, suggesting a willingness to eventually accept these advances in food.
Reforming the food system will require consumers to be knowledgeable about these issues, though, as well as what constitutes quality food to begin with. Because of this, the debaters decided that governments need to establish educational programs addressing this need for understanding, including consumption patterns and, here we go, the big one, portion sizes.
And initiatives to limit sugar consumption also are viewed as extremely necessary and could go as far as to prohibit the placement of sweets at the cashier.
Another potential roadblock impeding the success of emerging technologies is the fact that they must facilitate the decentralization of food production and distribution in order to really work. To create a sustainable, adaptable food system that can respond to varying levels of supply and demand, policy really needs to support communities in producing and distributing food locally. And it also needs to connect information and technology when additional food is required.
The differing nutritional needs of genetically distinct populations must be considered in production and distribution networks. To support food security, government agencies can identify and aid populations requiring specialized nutrients and personalized foods.
Essentially, what we're trying to get out here is that government and the private sector entities need to jointly commit to making quality foods available to all 9 billion people in 2050, rather than just the wealthiest 2.5 billion.
Smart grid technologies are pretty critical here in that they enable the food chain to improve transportation efficiency, reduce waste, and better utilize local resources.
And smart grids could also be a key in accommodating the genetically distinct nutritional needs of different populations. All of these factors play in well to that global yet local perspective we need in our food chain.
It's very important to also keep in mind that we must ensure that these technologies are affordable, adaptable, easy to understand, and ultimately driven by society.
And obviously, scientists can't just generate this technology and expect it to work seamlessly with existing stakeholders and systems. Part of this transition to embracing technology and quality-based food production really includes scientists collaborating with both farmers and the private sector. By helping farmers acquire and integrate new technologies, and by ensuring robust data exchange regarding traceability, climate, and consumer needs, there can truly be more successful harvests and less waste simultaneously.
And if you've ever worked on or even visited a small farm, let alone an industrial-sized establishment, you know just how much waste can accumulate.
You can say that again. But industry as well will require scientific assistance in adapting their technological processes to methodologies that optimize nutritional quality. We'll really need to highlight the role that the private sector will play in decreasing environmental impacts when introducing and adopting practices that use biotechnology as well. This could help shift public understanding and therefore increase consumer support for products that use these new technologies.
Yes, exactly. And speaking of consumers again, the incredible amount of widespread, unreliable public information regarding quality diets is a significant challenge to implementing a quality-based food system. Luckily, though, there are tons of opportunities for science-based knowledge to be shared with the public at all levels. Our podcast.
Right, exactly.
I don't know what just happened there.
Right. And programs like Italy's Foresight Project are definitely among these opportunities. But to retain support for the development of integrated biotechnologies, the scientific community needs to openly provide information about how these technologies actually work. And I can tell you right now that a job like that, one that is able and willing to provide this information, is totally going to vary from country to country. And if you caught our SynBio Live episode, you might remember that, for example, the EU's super strict mentality on these innovations has led to only one GE crop being cultivated in the region.
If we're going to have global interventions in food production, then we're going to need some streamlining of regulatory frameworks, which doesn't sound quite as sexy or interesting as some of our other points today, but it's definitely a vital one. And because of its importance, the scientific community was encouraged to propose regulatory schemes derived from evidence-based research for governments at state and national levels.
Basically, scientists here are tasked with researching and then distributing their findings to government bodies and officials. This information could assist the formation of safety analyses and measurements needed for the utilization of new biotechnology.
It was suggested that these safety and regulatory frameworks could actually follow the regulatory examples of the National Nanotechnology Initiative in the United States, which, by the way, is the U.S. government research and development initiative involving 20 departments and independent agencies that work together toward a shared vision of, quote, a future in which the ability to understand and control matter at the nanoscale leads to a revolution in technology and industry that benefits society, end quote. So it's pretty convenient that we can turn to this for reference and guidance.
Definitely. But besides solid regulatory frameworks, the success of system reforms really does depend on the types of interdisciplinary collaborations we mentioned before. These kinds of interactions need to happen at regional, national, and international levels of government, research, policy, private sector, and consumers. So a lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, for sure. And collaborations like this will most likely require the creation of internationally accessible data banks for knowledge transfer. And before you say, well, hey guys, don't governments basically thrive off secrecy and conferring competitive advantage? Think about this. Not sharing knowledge in matters like our food system often stifles innovation and impairs cooperation among nations that are attempting to actually reform the system that needs to be reformed. Rather, think how awesome it could be if agencies communicated and explored the application of new technologies in communities all around the world.
Sounds beautiful, just beautiful. So I think we'll end on a hopeful note there, no?
Yeah, and turn things over to the listeners.
Works for me.
What do you think are the biggest issues with our current food system?
Do you think the system needs a total reform, or maybe it just needs some tweaking?
And are emerging technologies our answer? What are your thoughts on implementing nanotech and biotech in the food system?
And is it realistic to try to facilitate a uniform global change?
Tweet us your answers at ISGP Forum. And don't forget the hashtag ISGP Forum.
We'll talk to you all on Twitter soon and catch you next time, right here on the Forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.